What's going on, Sky Town? Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. My name is James Kay. With me on the mic, as always, is your co-host, Chris Bennett. Chris, how are we doing today, man? It's been a hectic couple of weeks for us.
Much better, man. As you can see here, I have my Logan Square delicacy, arroz con gandules, courtesy of Rico's Fresh Market. Rico's Fresh Market. They don't sponsor us yet, but they should.
We'll work on that one for the next Skyhook pod. But until then, you could actually kind of sponsor an episode
or two. Donate to our Venmo. You can Venmo us at the Skyhook Podcast if you are interested in contributing to what we're doing here. But and also rate and review the show wherever you get your podcast. It also helps us out. But Chris, the Sky have started 1-1. We were at the season opener together, which there was a little bit of controversy at the end of regulation, which we'll get to in a sec. And then the Sky blew out the Liberty by 33 points. So, I mean, this team has, I don't really know how much takeaways we can really get from the first two games of the season with not everybody back. But I do think there's a few things that we need to go over just because it's been fascinating to see these three bigs together, Rebecca Gardner, the 31-year-old rookie, getting her shot and thriving in that first game, Chris, thriving in that first game. Give me just one takeaway that you've had from the first two games of the Sky season so far.
Unfortunately, it's going to be more on the downside, which is that the Sky are not in complete sync yet. And I'm sure that that'll persist for at least the first month as players come in and out of the team. We know that there's going to be some decisions made on Sparkle Taylor, Annalee Maley soon, I would think, when Kalia Copper and Julie Alleman come into camp. But the defensive and sometimes offensive synergy has not necessarily been there. And we saw it in game one, where Emma Mieseman, for the first maybe three quarters, looked a bit out of sync on the offensive end, looking more to pass than as a threat to shoot. And she really didn't get it going until the fourth quarter. There were a couple of moments of the Sky, obviously 25 turnovers, not all of which were forced, is going to be some offensive miscues. And in the game against the Liberty, there were a few times, a specific moment I saw in the third quarter, where the Sky weren't necessarily together. Dana Evans was running a two-player game with Candace Parker and had an opportunity to find a pick and roll to the basket. The play worked out as Dana drove to the basket, drew two defenders, and flipped a nice pass back to Candace. But she immediately was talking to her, and you could tell it was kind of like, here's what we're doing on this play, you know, and Dana was listening. So these are things that are going to obviously, I think, would work themselves out. One of the other things that I saw in yesterday's game, and not too often, but there was definitely the one time where the Sky were, as they have been, too unselfish. And Annalee Maley had a wide open three at the corner, albeit at a closing Hanju, but opted to kick it out to the wing. And then the ball rotated back to the top and the possession ended in a contested and blocked drive by Dana Evans. So I think the synergy is something that we really look at, especially after you lose a game the way the Sky did in the opener. And even in the game where they won very comfortably, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well. So I think that's what you really look for as they move forward. And in this early part of the season where everybody's kind of jockeying and nothing is really set, this is actually probably the most important time of the season because there's a lot of games that could be easily won or easily lost that might not be as easily picked back up when rosters are set and teams are functioning at their highest mentally, if not physically.
I think that's a really important last point to point out because that's what did the Sky in last season where they scuffled at the beginning of the season. And it's what, I mean, they were a 500 team at the end of the season last year, but those earlier games could have really elevated them in the standings and get them a better position in the playoffs, honestly, even maybe a bye. I would have to go back and check on that, but I think we agree on the same things, but it's a half full, half empty glass kind of perspective, because I think that when you're without two of your top six players and you're really running at 60% capacity, you can only run eight players out there, just given the hard cap, like the hardship situation. And for them to beat a Sparks team that is pretty much all the way there outside of without Christy Tolliver, I think that was a really good sign to limit Liz Cambage to 1 point in the first half, to really let them use Jordan Canada and let her take over the game. And she really attacked Dana Evans in that at the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime, especially, which, I mean, I think that kind of makes sense for a sophomore a little bit to struggle a little bit on the defensive end, even though she has improved on that end of the floor. To me, it was such a huge thing for them to be able to go out there, give it to the Sparks. And really, I mean, we can't just point to that final play at the end of regulation as the reason the Sky lost that game, because there's so much that happened in the 39 minutes and, you know, 50 seconds that were a part of that game that you can point to and be like, the Sky need to improve on that. But at the same time, you see they just destroy a Liberty team that really handed it to the Sun the other night. And Sabrina Ionescu just couldn't do anything against the Sky yesterday. It was a real, I thought it was a really impressive showing from the Sky and being like, you know what? Like, we know we've had the reputation for not having a stellar defensive backcourt, but look what we just did to Sabrina. Now, obviously that had a lot to do with that, the hard hedging that we saw at the end of last season as well. And the bigs, just the presence down low and just wiping out every opportunity at the rim for the most part, outside of a few bunnies that the Liberty missed. I thought it was a really impressive showing. And I don't take away too much in the first couple weeks of the season, just because, like you said, rosters are still being pieced together. But I think the Sky have a lot to be thrilled about after those first two games.
And you're definitely right. I'm always going to look at what might be missing first, because we know the team is good. We know that barring any major mishaps, they're going to be there in the postseason. But I always look to see what can be improved on, even at this juncture. But you're right. They had a lot of success, especially defensively. New York missed some shots that they would probably make, some shots that they probably made on Saturday. Natasha Howard was 3-for-7 from three-point range against the Connecticut Sun, and she was 0-for-2 on Wednesday night. But as you said, Sabrina, not only was Sabrina Ionescu limited without a field goal, no field goals, but Nyjah Laney shot 4-for-12 too. And she would, you would figure, I mean, as the career as she's had in New York, you would figure that she would be able to pick up that slack along with a player like Natasha Howard, but she was severely limited offensively. The Sky attacked with Dana Evans. And even though I'm not a huge fan of the way that their hard hedge on the pick and roll is shaping up, especially at the elbow, they were able to force the ball away, force the Liberty into some tough decisions. And even when their defense rotated late, they were able to, they had help on the back end with the wingspan of Emma Meisman and Azaree Stevens. There's a specific play where the Sky were out of position and Z came out of pretty much no man's land and knocked the ball out of bounds that was going to go to the corner for an open look. So even when the Sky make mistakes, they're going to have ways to clean it up. You know, they're not catastrophic failures. They are errors of just minute timing that can be erased by the players that they have, high IQ, great help side defenders. And they were able to work on the offensive end. Again, they didn't shoot particularly well, but I thought Emma and Candace and Dana Evans as a facilitator worked a lot better in this game. Plus the addition of Rebecca Gardner, who was eating Sabrina alive from the opening tip, gave the Sky much more flexibility. And as James Wade said, he didn't have to worry that much about substitutions.
I didn't get to watch the replay of the Liberty game yesterday between them and the Sky, but live, oh my God, Rebecca Gardner. I mean, it really felt like that, like she has been in the league forever, you know, like it really felt like she's someone that was not fazed at all by being in the moment and being up against someone like Sabrina Ionescu, who is a big name in the league. And for her to in her WNBA debut to get 14 points, go 6-of-9 of shooting. I believe there was one blown layup as well on her end where she easily could have been 7-for-9 with 16 points. And
yeah,
she really brought it. And she's so fast. That's what stood out to me so much. It's like, okay, they were trying to figure out how to replace Crystal Bradford at the wing. Just there was that gaping hole behind Ka that they just needed to fill. And Rebecca Gardner, I know she started at the 2 yesterday, but James Wade, I don't know if he said this in the press conference or if he told me this at practice, but he said that he sees her playing 1-3. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that she fills in right behind Ka, even though she's not mean, she's a little bit on the skinnier end, but I do think that she can handle the physicality and honestly be able to blow by some of these wings that aren't going to be able to keep up with her speed.
And I want to walk back something I just said. I think I was more focusing on the shots early on. The Sky shot it pretty well yesterday. They were 45% for the game and hit 10 of their 22 threes. Courtney Vandersloot had a tough night overall. She was 3 for 12, but pretty much everybody else in the starting rotation hit their shots.
You're so, right, Chris.
My mistake.
No, but you're right. They came alive in the fourth quarter in a way that were like Dana Evans had a heat check where I believe she either had like 8 or 9 points. And then, you know, Maley also, I believe, had two threes. And then Tina, maybe Tina missed her one attempt. But you're right. Candace, I believe, only shot, 4 for 11 from the field. Courtney went 3 for 12. You're not wrong when you say that.
And I mean, it's true. I think I was watching back. You're there in real time. So there's some things that you can't quite see the same way. But it was striking to me how early on it was a fairly close game and the Sky came out very, very well defensively, but they weren't hitting all of their shots at the outset and they just kept applying defensive pressure. And that's really what helped them pull away. If defense, which has not necessarily been the Sky's calling card in their successful James Wade tenure, is their first thing that teams think about, like, oh, we've got to prepare for this team defensively, then there's only so much you can do. And I don't want to jump the gun, but there's the embarrassment of riches that they have where we thought they would be weak because, you know, it sucks now after the play she did in game one. I don't know if Annalee Maley has a spot when Ka and Julie come in camp, even if she is a 3-4 small forward type player, just because, you know, do you keep Annalee? Do you keep Sparkle Taylor? Who goes where? How do you get Ruthie Hibbard minutes with these players on the roster too? And there's a lot of decisions that have to be made. So where we were thinking after the first game, like, you know, obviously there's substitutions and that'll be worked out. Now it's which of these players do we want to get some time so they can audition and get picked up later in the season? And who's going to be integral to our push towards the end of the season?
You're totally right. I think that the decision they're going to have to make with Annalee and Sparkle Taylor is going to be a fascinating move by James Wade whenever it comes up, because they're going to need some depth behind Rebecca Gardner as well. I mean, you want to be able to move all these pieces around, and Julie Alleman honestly might even get some time at the three. I mean, this is they're going to get freaking creative with these lineups like we've seen in the past. We got to talk about embarrassment of riches, man. We got to talk about Candace, Emma, and Azure. That group together looks really freaking good, Chris. That group looks freaking good.
What are we calling it?
The ace lineup. The ace lineup, man. Azure, Candace, Emma. I was blown away by what they were doing yesterday, and not even just like them actually like making shots and like facilitating the ball. It's just like it all looks so fluid early on between those three, and they've been practicing a little bit in camp with those three together. And maybe that's out of necessity with Ka and Ali being out of the lineup for the first two games. And Ali will be back for this upcoming game on the 14th. So
that's great news.
Yeah. And I asked her like, hey, if this was a playoff game, would you have been able to go out there? And she's like, yeah, probably just because it's that point in the season. So it's like, this is more about managing that injury. And it's a really important note, but look, these are way too early numbers, but I'm just going to talk about the three person lineup between those three. I know you think I'm nuts for this, but in 28 minutes, those three, when they're on the floor, have held opponents to 31.9% from the field, 25% from three. And they have, that stat just went away. Oh yeah. And they've outscored opponents by 19 points in 28 minutes.
Ooh.
So, look, it's too early on to make sweeping declarations about anything in the WNBA right now. Like, if you told me the Lynx are going to be back in the playoffs somehow after their start and all these waves that they've had and all the hardship contracts that they put on as well, like, I would believe anything at this point. The WNBA is that crazy. I do believe that. But But I believe my like the eye test, especially with this, because Emma, there was this one play that really stood out to me yesterday with Courtney grabbed a rebound. She passed it to Emma at half court in transition. Emma then drove like pretty much to the free throw line, and then she drew the help. And then Z was trailing. Emma passes it to her at the top of the arc, and then she just nails a spot up three. Like, holy crap, man. That again, it's just so fluid this early on when those, I mean, Azaray and Emma have been able to practice a little bit more together just because they've been in camp pretty much since day one. But Candace to just come in, who she told me she doesn't run fives anymore in the offseason, man. Like, she's just coming in and going for it right now, which is kind of awesome. But just see those, like the fluidity between them and them also leaving some shots that they should have made, honestly. Like, Candace missed a bunny last night. You know, Emma hasn't particularly shot the ball well from three yet. The upside of those three together, I just think continues to go up and up as we see more of them playing together, whether that's in practice or in the games.
Most definitely. And it wasn't lost on me either. That play was very, very good. But Z got a three-point attempt within the first 2 minutes of game time in both of these games.
Yeah.
The broadcast had their foibles, but Stephen Bartle made a very good point. With Emma Meisman and Candace Parker in camp, Azaray Stevens has had to, as he said, had to move her game towards the perimeter more. She's still going to get attempts on near the baseline, in the paint, but she had to expand a bit and shoot more threes. Five of the eight shots that she took last night were three-point shots. And even though she made one, she's taking those shots with confidence. She's getting the ball confidently in those spots. The team trusts her to take those shots. And she might not hit three threes a night, but even if she hits two, people have to respect that. And that does what? Open up the lane and the inside the key area for Candace and Emma and Kalia Copper when she gets there too. And Rebecca Gardner and Sparkle Taylor, if she stays on the roster, who can also hit the mid-range shot.
Absolutely. And that's, again, when they play five out or, you know, 4-1 basketball, like 4-1 out basketball, like everything just opens up in the paint. And like we talked about it last time, man, like Ka is just going to be able to run free with with those three on the floor, honestly. And defensively, I just don't know how anyone's going to score on them. And you even seen someone like Dana. Like Dana, she was targeted last night. And the same way that, you know, the Sparks did with her towards the end of the game against the Sparks, Dana was getting targeted a little bit, but it didn't matter because she had, if someone got past her, and she did, and she positioned herself well where she still forced a contested shot even without her hands up. Like, it was just a tough shot to get up against her, which I thought was impressive. But if someone got by her, they were greeted at the rim by either Emma, CP, or Azaray. Like, we're talking about something that no other team in the WNBA has, which is three bigs that can facilitate a little bit for you, that can stretch the floor and can defend at the rim. And in Candace's case, and even a little bit Emma too, on the perimeter, I don't know, there's other teams out there that actually have that type of malleability between their bigs. I can't name another team, if you can.
Not that I can think of. I think the difference with Connecticut, when I was really coming down to it, is that their guards don't have that same kind of two-way ability either. I mean, Jonquel Jones is their main defender, so a lot of everything is going to run through her on both ends. And they have Alyssa Thomas, who could stop a truck, but they don't have the same kind of roster flexibility. Natisha Heidemann is a great scorer, but she's not necessarily the best defensive guard. So you're right. If you're talking about teams that could comparably match up with the Sky in terms of both the tiers of the league and roster flexibility, it is hard to think of one. I would almost say Indiana, but not in the terms of the first, really the second, when you have Destiny Henderson and Emily Engsler giving you what they can defensively, that'll enable, I think, some chances for them to run out. But they're obviously not a playoff team, at least not that we don't think that they're a playoff team coming in. They've gotten off to an impressive start. We'll see if they can maintain it. But that's really the only team that I could think of really getting into it that has the same kind of two-way flexibility as the Sky have.
Agreed. I think it's like the trio. It's like Daenerys' dragons in Game of Thrones. Like, you really have to... I know you're not a big Game of Thrones man.
No, I like Game of Thrones. They just fucked up the last season.
Yeah, oh, I actually can't talk about it. This is too sore of a subject for me. The last takeaway I want to go to before we talk a little bit about the Marquee Network stuff that you listened to on the broadcast yesterday that I didn't get a chance to listen to.
Yeah.
But we got to talk about Dana Evans, because what she did in the third quarter against the Sparks, where I think she put up either 17 or 19 points, and then yesterday where she put up 15 and just looks so comfortable out there, man. Like, she looks so comfortable where, like, I got to admit to you, Chris, I didn't necessarily view her as the Sky's point guard of the future. Like, when they acquired Julie Aleman this offseason, I'm like, wow, they struck gold, because in case Sloot doesn't come back for prioritization purposes or just needing to take some time off after, she's still dealing with that foot injury that is just going to persist until she can get some real rest. I really thought, okay, Julie Aleman is the next one up. I
would have agreed with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really think Dana has really carved out a role in this system. And look, there's only so much that you're going to be able to do on the defensive side as a 5'6" guard. But she's shown that her offensive capabilities are able to completely overcome some of those deficiencies, if you even want to call them that at this stage of her career. It's really hard for me to judge a player's defensive capabilities when they've only played in the league for a couple of years. I do think that's something that you can build up over time and become successful at, as long as you have that dog in you. And not to use a quote from James Wade, a partial quote. I really was impressed by Dana and her jump from year one to year two. Like, I can't say enough good things about how she looked on the offensive side.
Most definitely. I'm trying to find on our Twitter feed who said, because when we last discussed things, I was saying that Dana might have trouble guarding taller guards. And I still think to some degree that'll be true. But the way that she's played at the outset really takes that factor out of contention for the most part. Sabrina Ionescu had height on her and Dana stuck her really well. But Nigel Laney had a size and strength advantage, and Dana did fairly well too. There was a lot of switching there and efforts to trap Benaja and throw different bodies at her. But Dana Evans has taken on the challenge of defending guards in this league, and she has taken it with both fists.
Yeah,
is the best way I can put it. You're right. She's got the dog in her. Defense takes a special kind of person who really, 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 really wants it. You can have all the physical tools in the world, but to defend on a nightly basis for 25 to 30 minutes in this league and still be a good scorer takes something really special. And she has that. No doubt she has that. On the offensive end, the only thing that I've seen that she could get better at is maybe not necessarily being more patient in terms of slowing down, but letting the floor open up to her rather than always taking it down the defense's throat, because she's driven into some tunnels a few times. But for the most part, she can take a lot of players off the dribble one-on-one, and she has her head up enough to find players when they're open. There was one play where she just barely missed a cutter coming off.
Yeah,
I think it was Emma Mieseman, and Natasha Howard was shading to the side, and she had her for a second and just missed it. That's a play that she makes next year or near the end of the season. So, yeah, I love what Dana Evans has done.
I think that's a really good point, because honestly, I kind of like her being this aggressive early on. Like, get your confidence in it early in the season when you're getting a lot of tick before Julie Aleman comes back, before Allie Quigley and Ka come back. Like, get those reps. Shoot that ball, you know? Like, get those shots up, because you're not going to be shooting at the same volume later in the season, and you got to be ready. You got to be ready. And I do feel like she did learn from some of those mistakes where, like you're talking about, man, like, she is met at the rim by three people and trying to hoist up a layup. But like, her instincts, it even evolved during the game yesterday where she, you know, she found Candace after like, she again, when she drove to the rim, was met by a couple of bodies, and then she turned around and flipped it to Candace at the elbow. Like, those are things that, like, learning on the fly like that is what makes good players potentially become great. And I'm not necessarily saying Dana Evans is going to become the greatest point guard in league history, you know, or like going to be the greatest guard in the league or anything. You know, that's a goal of hers. She told me that, like, she said, I want to become the best guard in the league. That mentality alone is enough for me to be convinced, like, this kid is going to be able to be in a Sky uniform, be a contributor potentially over the next couple of years, because there's a lot of question marks. And if she can solve or at least eliminate one of them, I think that says so much about what the possibility is, what this guy can do down the road, even though we're focused on 2022. But Chris, let's talk about the Marquee Network stuff, because I am completely oblivious to this. I've been writing all morning and I've been dealing with some personal stuff outside of that. So, like, what happened with the Marquee Network? Like, what was the controversy that came around it?
So, more to the point with the game, Jason, I believe his name is Jason Ross. I want to confirm this. He had the game with Stephen Bardo last night. And as you know, Stephen Bardo has been doing Sky games for a long time. It was Jason Ross Jr. and Stephen Bardo, play-by-play in color for the Sky yesterday on Marquee Network. And they had a lot of trouble with pronunciations, and people, including our colleague Miles Ehrlich, were really disappointed. I would say ticked off. Mm-hmm. Terica, she knows sports, was talking about it as well, just asking who has this game. And it wasn't great. And it was surprising to me because Stephen has done these games for so long. He's familiar with the team. But Michaela Onyenwere, they were halfway on what the pronunciation guide said, what their eyes were telling them. And there's, you know, you get in those moments where you're in between and somehow you short circuit, but they had a lot of trouble with names. There was, I think, Ionescu, there was difficulty there. And these are marquee name players or players that have been in the league for, I think, 2-3 years now for Michaela and Sabrina. So that was a bad look. And then only about 10 days now after Marquee picked up Sky Games, I think a slate of 19 for the season, the news came out 2 days ago that DirecTV will be carrying Marquee Sports Network nationwide, which, as you know, is a follower of the Cubs in some degree. Yeah. The whole idea was that Marquee was this privatized network that you couldn't get on Hulu or a lot of other streaming services. So at first glance, that's great, but they're not carrying the Cubs or the Sky Games nationwide live. They're not carrying any live games nationwide on DirecTV. And if you get it on Hulu, then I think you're in luck, but not everybody. Hulu sucks for live sports. I'm just going to come out and say it. It
completely
does.
Completely. Yeah.
So that's the news. It's the broadcast was upsetting in the moment. Hopefully that'll improve. The DirecTV news, worse in the future, because there's a lot of, I was just thinking about this, there's a lot of sports bars that have DirecTV in their establishments. So not only do you have to deal with rainy night digital cliff DirecTV, you won't even be able to watch the game if you're at the bar. And that's important for the WNBA to expand its reach, get to the point where people are like, yo, can I turn on the Sky game, the Sun game, the Storm game, the Lynx game? If you lose that out, you're really losing out on a market share.
You have to have the product be accessible. I feel like that's someone who's not in business. That seems like a pretty obvious idea to run with. I mean, it's crazy that fans have to just go to all these alternative networks in general just to find WNBA games. I mean, I just wrote an article for Market Watch about the best ways to watch the WNBA this season. And I mean, you have to go have a Amazon Prime account, Facebook account, a Twitter account. Now you need Marquee Sports for the Sky and the things, and then YouTube TV. I mean, I love YouTube TV personally. Just because it's, I don't know, just the interface is just so user-friendly, but not a sponsor, just a compliment. But I mean, like, when you have to pack up five services, and that's not even including NBA TV, like, I'm sure you need some sports add-on for NBA TV. I mean, I have my buddy's League Pass account, and we somehow made it work to get NBA TV. If you're a fan, like, what are you supposed to do to be able to enjoy your favorite team? Like, it feels like you have to be almost privileged to be able to afford all the sports packages. And, you know, YouTube TV, I think, costs like $65 a month.
Oh yeah.
Amazon Video is like $10 a month. And, like, you know, then League Pass, $25 if you're paying for WNBA League Pass. My NBA League Pass is like over $100 for the season. And, like, you know, it's like all these things add up just to watch the WNBA, which supposedly wants to see its product grow. So, like, I don't know what fans are supposed to do. And then once you get to the product, for the announcers to constantly be mispronouncing the names, it's like, a part of me, like, there's some things where, like, I understand messing up a name, or, like, it's honestly not giving a pronunciation sheet ahead of time, which I've heard has happened before. It's like, what are you supposed to do if you're, like, filling in for someone? There's some level of acceptance of the situation where, like, look, everybody messes up at their job. But if you supposedly care about the product, like you said, these guys were there for such a long time and have been integrated in the culture. It's like, that's just being lazy at a certain point.
Yeah. And that's the point right there. You hit on it exactly. Sabrina Whitaker talked about it when she came on with us on War Media the other day. People producing the WNBA have to actually like the WNBA. And if these people don't like or care about the product, then they're not going to give it the effort it deserves. And I'm not saying that that's Steven or Jason. Maybe they just had a rough night. But the marquee deal, the DirecTV deal, they have to put people in there in this place. They have to put people in these positions where the product is good. The product looks good. The product sounds good. The product is presented as a professional sports broadcast in the way that we've come to expect in our entertainment-driven country and the world at large. And it's not like there's a shortage of these people. I've seen the Tom Brady deal where they're just paying him $300 million to announce football when, you know, is he going to be that good? We don't know. There are hundreds of thousands of people out there who want to get that job. But because the name is Tom Brady, they're going for style over substance. And if you do that, even if you're the NFL, your product suffers. With the WNBA, they don't have that luxury of being the NFL.
Yeah, and it's, when it comes to Tom Brady, I mean, Chris, robots have advanced so far to this point where they can even hire them as an announcer. No, but it's outrageous that you put in all the work for so many years and then you reward some guy that, I mean, it's not just some guy, it's Tom Brady, obviously. I watched like one episode of The Man in the Arena, which I don't watch. It's horrible. Oh my God, the editing. I'm just like, this is so bad. But there's people who've been waiting their whole lives for an opportunity like this. And then Tom Brady can just waltz right in and he gets that job for, how much money again? It was like $300
million. $375 million for 10 games. $37.5 million a game.
That's fucking nuts. That's fucking nuts. And excuse my language.
The people playing the game aren't getting paid that much for the game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, God, it's crazy just how much money has gone into sports announcing now these days. Because even Tony Romo is getting paid so much money these days. And that's got to translate over to the W at a certain point, like where, you know, I think Ryan Rucco does such a great job and just that brings that energy and like just a familiar face. Like, I kind of want to see people like Andrea Carter also get like an opportunity to get there. And, you know, just people that really care about the game just need to be the ones that are in front of the camera more, because it really hurts the product when, I don't know. I watch a lot of games on mute, and that's not like just because I like to concentrate more on like what's just happening on the court. But like if Rucco's doing a playoff game, I'm turning that shit on because he gets me hyped up for like what's going on like in the last few minutes of a game. You know what I mean?
He doesn't have the catchphrases that I most closely like identify with, but he's really, really good. And you pair him up with pretty much anybody, whether it's Carolyn, LaChina, anybody, they're going to have a good game. Rebecca Lobos is the A-team for WNBA. So you put them together, it's solid. I think the only thing that they could do better, and I'm not a huge fan of hers, but she would be really successful, get Doris Burke. Get Doris Burke for the WNBA. Why not? I think she would be really, really successful there. But yeah, you when you have a guy, when you have somebody who you know calls a good game, you nurture that talent. And I think the I'll finish mine off with this. I think what the WNBA and ESPN have fallen into the trap of is that not only are they not necessarily doing the right things marketing-wise, there's things they could do much better, but you have the one or two or three people that you go to all the time, and not all of those people carry things as well as they could. I think this might be disagreeable to some listeners, mm-hmm. and I'm okay with that. When you have Holly Rowe, who is the person for off of the court type interviews, broadcast, breaking news, things like that, she's the only person, pretty much. She's like the go-to person. And when you put somebody in that position, I think at ESPN especially, you build them up to the level of they are the product now, yes. Not necessarily the game. It's what you had with they made their anchor stars in the 90s, but then it's come to this point now where when you have, and hopefully soon they would have a talk show, just analysis, something like that, you're going to have Holly Rowe in that role of not, I don't want to say Stephen A, because that would suck. Holly Rowe would never be Stephen A. But when the Courtney Vandersloot news came out, that was the prime example. This thing came out on the free agency show. It was immediately scrutinized. Where was the sources? We never really got anything definitive. And then as Courtney refuted it when she signed her deal. That's the danger of putting somebody up at the expense of the product. And you have to get people in working as broadcasters, as announcers, what have you, that are going to do a great job without taking up extra spotlight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, it's just good to have different perspectives on things. And remind me to tell you something about Media Day off air, because it's hilarious.
I'm excited for this.
Yeah. But I completely agree with you. It's just, you need to reshuffle the deck every once in a while, because it becomes so stale. Like, look, the draft, the commentating with it, stale as shit, man. Like, that was so, I just couldn't get into it as much. And I don't know. You have to reshuffle the deck every once in a while, because it just, things just become, I don't know if banal is the right word, but it just becomes kind of like, I'm used to this. It's like, I know what I'm getting when I turn the TV on. That's what you don't want if you're a network like ESPN. Okay, do you want to finish up with our new segment with Kalia Copper tweets?
Yes, if you didn't have one, I found a good one. I found two good ones, but I was forced to choose.
Oh, no, Chris, we have to switch off with this, because what I find amusing, what you find amusing might be different. And I'm curious. So what you want to do, the one where I do not like surprises.
Yeah. That was the one I found. That was May 10th. Kalia said, I do not like surprises, period. I'm going to kick it to you first. Do you agree or disagree?
I think I am a lame human being, and that I don't like surprises, really. No, I don't. I'm someone that I'm so anxious all the time, Chris. You speak with me for 5 minutes during an interview, and you're like, oh man, this guy, you know? And I don't love surprises. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the setting. Like, I would never want a birthday surprise. Like, that to me is just like, fuck no, do not surprise me with all the people that I'm going to be interacting with. And I had no idea going into it. Like, no. No birthday surprise, but like if it's someone like I haven't seen in a while, my friend group is just like, we're going out tonight and that person appeared. That's a great surprise, because there's you're not the center of attention or anything like that. And I honestly, when I think of surprises, I think of birthdays. So it's just like in that setting, I am just so repulsed by that. And just, I want to be prepared. I want to feel like I'm entering the situation I'm familiar with. This is why I'm the most awkward human being on the planet. I'm tossing it to you. Do you like surprises or do you not like surprises?
I'm 50-50. I've had a birthday surprise party once, and I was pleasantly surprised. I've gotten very used to being far away from people or not always seeing them. So when somebody does spring a surprise on me, either like that or just like, hey, we're all here, I might have my heart in my chest, but I'd be pretty excited. I mean, what, like surprise cake, surprise day off work, surprise bedroom activities.
Ooh.
All of these things sound great.
What is happening to this podcast? Oh my God. Man, thank God we have the explicit warning on these episodes now. Because before, I mean, we were talking about Courtney Vandersloot, Dana Evans, Allie Quigley. Now we're talking about surprise bedroom activities. Fuck yeah, Chris. Welcome to the midnight version of the Skyhook podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Skyhook after dark.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We have to end it on that. We have to end it on that. That's fucking beautiful. Oh, amazing. Oh, my God. Love it. We're definitely doubling down on this segment. This is great. Oh, my God. Chris, glad we got a chance to talk about everything with the sky and outside of it. And, you know, we'll be back soon. We got to be talking about some of these other teams in the league because there was just so many games that happened this past weekend and what are coming up, you know, before we even sit down again to talk about the sky. So, yeah, be looking out for that, right? You know, subscribe to the podcast so you all make sure to see when our next episode comes out. But Chris, so happy we did this, man.
Most definitely. Big road trip coming up to start, even with all we talked about. It's going to be really exciting.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Skyhook podcast. If you want to contact us, you can always do so by emailing our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time, that is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. And if you want to rate and review the show, if you want to support us, please do that. It really helps us being able to put out more episodes. And if you do want to make a financial contribution to what we're doing over here, you can Venmo us at the Skyhook Podcast. Our logo should be right there, so it should be easy to find. And yeah, glad that me and Chris had a chance to talk all things Chicago Sky. And stay tuned for more episodes to come this week. Until next time.